Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Mina and her expert guests will have a full breakdown of the NFL draft next week, and this summer they'll do a team-by-team preview to get you ready for next season. That's The Mina Kimes Show, available wherever you are consuming this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We have a guest joining us this week. First timer, check him out at The Athletic. He'll be doing live draft coverage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Nate Tice, what's going on, man?
Not too much. Thanks for having me. I love getting to sit around for the ad reads too. It's because I don't have to do them. So I always like hearing everyone's style on them and actually how they go about them. So that was a great experience already. Off to a great start.
I'm very Joe Friday about them ad reads because I don't get no extra for them. Like, I ain't going to sell you short, but you know what I'm saying? They ain't so much. Enough. Yeah. I'm not doing it from the diaphragm, you know?
No, you're like a running back. Hey, it's blocked for 4 yards. I'm getting you 4 yards. I'm there not getting any extra after that. No, that's perfect. That's exactly how to do it.
There we go. Now, we got a lot of NFL draft talk to do with you, but I want to ask you this question once. First, it's kind of a running thing that we do on our show, but it's an interesting question for me to ask you just because of who your father is and the fact that he's 6'7". You ever try your dad?
Once. And that's all I'll leave it at.
The world possessed you?
Alcohol was involved. And it actually wasn't even like that big of a, like, him and I go, like, you know, have our, we're Irish, you know, so, you know, we'll get at it. But like, we're both kind of gentle giants, even though his bite is worse than his bark. And there was just one time where he kind of was just poking. It was over a dart game, of all things. And he just poked me and poked me and poked me and just kept needling me, talking. And just went and went and went. And then I finally just had enough, bowed up on him. And I won't say it went well. but it didn't go badly. You know, I held my own enough, but I tried once and that was it. It was like, all right, we checked that box. We got it done. I don't have a brother, so I never had the brother fight. So I got that family, the little family fight done once. And that was it. Check the box.
You know, I guess I did not realize that you were also a giant. Right. That's probably five. Like I get that. Yeah. 6'5". That's the difference between 6'5" and 6'7" is not insignificant.
Well, that's the thing is I don't realize how tall I am because I grew up around my dad and my mom's 5'2". So I was either going to be 5'10" or 6'4", 6'5". Like, there's no in between. And luckily I got the taller side, but I really, until I got older, I grew up in NFL locker rooms. I grew up around my dad. And as I got taller, even like short DBs were calling me Little Tice, so I was never like, oh, I'm tall. And then all of a sudden, really, I moved to the Bay Area for a couple of years. And that's when I was like, oh, I'm tall. I'm walking around San Fran and I can see it like 2 miles straight down. Like, my visibility was high because I was just so much taller than everybody else there. So don't really realize how big I am until I start talking to other people.
Yeah. And Nate's dad is Mike Tice, a former head coach of the Vikings, who I always say is the one thing I say about him. I feel like he got a bad rap for saying the quiet part out loud, which was, we're going to throw the ball to Randy Moss every chance we get, guys. Why? Because I'm not stupid. That's why.
People call it target share now and they love it. It's all fancy. There's fancy websites built on that now. And it was originally started with the Randy ratio. I'm glad you brought that up. It was it's a classic. My dad, he's a little more to him, at least mentally, than people realize, a little more cerebral, but he also can't help himself. He's a loud New Yorker and he has to tell everybody his secret plan on his opening press conference. So that's the yin and yang of Mike Tice right there.
I feel like there's a bit of a Mike Tice, Dan Campbell parallel in that sense, that they're the big guys. And in that way, it becomes difficult for people to think of them as something other than big guys.
Yes. Kevin Seifert compared them already. When Dan Campbell got hired, he's like, or no, it wasn't when he got hired. It was Dan Campbell was the interim coach in Miami, I believe. Mm-hmm. And like day one, he ran Oklahoma drills and it was like, we're going to build up toughness. And Kevin was like, there's a lot of parallels between Dan Campbell and Mike Tice. And that was years and years ago. And as it's gone along, I'm like, there are a lot of comparables between these two. Sometimes they put their foot in their mouth and they don't realize it. And then you kind of brush it over and you're like, hey, you know, he's actually not bad at what he does. You know?
Yo, I've come around on Dan Campbell because I remember, you know, because I was working with Levitard at the time. So yeah. Man Campbell, because like Dan Campbell is the embodiment of a form of masculinity that Levitard just can't stand. Like that's the Dan's that like I had to call him Levitard there, which I never do for what it's worth because it was too many Dan's. but Campbell, I looked up and like Hard Knocks, I was like, hey, this guy ain't so bad. And then I looked at his staff and was like, damn, he's Branch Rickey.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. He's looking at the Indianapolis Clowns and just, you know, he's scouting them, you know, he's looking throughout the league.
Hey man, your pops is out here with Dante Culpepper. The parallels continue.
Pat Moss, he had black defensive coordinators, he had a black special teams coach. He was all about it. That's what having the pros of having a former player really matters, because a lot of them don't give a about all that, like, you right. know, they just hire, it truly is hiring the best guy or guys they get along with, and I think that helps. They're not pulled part of that old boys network that the NFL is kind of littered with, and that's something I found out when I was going through the coaching ranks. I thought it was very normal that you play in the NFL for 14 years and then a year later you're an NFL coach. Like that's just as everybody's trajectory, right? And then there I am, a GA at Pitt, going, man, this isn't what it's all cracked up to be. I thought you become a head coach in 5 years. But I think that's what helps, is that when you don't go through that and you have, you know, your buddy-buddy system going on, you kind of hire the guys you respect and like. And I think that just opens up horizons maybe more than a lot of those other coaches that climb the rank with all these other guys that are, you know, grinder coach types.
Right. And I think Culpepper, it makes for a nice segue into this draft, because I have been fascinated with Anthony Richardson since the first time I saw him play in 2021, where he did not play well, but I was like, oh, that's a first round pick. And then I saw him play against Utah and I was like, oh, there's the number one pick. Now, he's not going to be the number one pick, but I am a little surprised that the scuttlebutt is that this many teams would let him fall after we saw Josh Allen. And I would think that nobody would want to be the person that took Sam Darnold over Josh Allen, basically.
Yeah. I'm doing a video on him right now, 'cause I just want to cram it in right before the draft, you know, get those 1,000 views on YouTube. And as I'm rewatching, this is like the fourth time I've rewatched these games, 'cause I have to pull the clips now, 'cause again, I'm an idiot and I watch the games knowing I have to make a video, but don't save the plays. I have to put in the video. So I have to do it again. And I'm watching, I'm like, what am I missing? Shouldn't we be like head over heels over this guy? You know, just a truly, truly S-tier, all-time generational athlete, and does a lot of the little things really well as far as moving in the pocket and also just the mental side. They put a lot on his plate, you know, as far as handling plays, way more than Dante Culpepper ever did at UCF or Josh Allen did at Wyoming. And I don't know. It's almost like, I thought that because of Josh Allen that everybody would be gaga over Anthony Richardson. And it's like we're back to the Baker Mayfield discussion, where it's all about the heart, you know, the size of the fight, the dog, as opposed to, you know, the size of the dog in the fight, which I don't know. If we're watching the Super Bowl or watching the final four teams the last couple of years, what do the top quarterbacks all look like? They're all big, athletic, and can throw all over the yard and are mentally astute. So I don't know. I'm totally with you. He's my QB1. I think we have talked about this. I watched the LSU game to start this spring, and I'm like, what, this guy should be the number one pick with a bullet next to it. So I understand the completion percentage and all that, but there is way more to him than even just the athletic, crazy athletic traits that he has.
You know, so one part of it is, I don't know, have you ever read Bruce Feldman's book, Meat Market, about recruiting?
Yes.
And I remember reading that, and it was the first time that I realized like the way the scouts looked at asses, like literally the asses of players. And they're looking for dudes with big old bulbous asses. Like that's what they want. There's a legitimate explanation for it, right? It's a muscle of power, right? Like all of that stuff. But, you know, it sounds a little bit weird. And then you talk to scouts and the way they talk about certain prospects, like it can make you a little bit uncomfortable, right? Because they're in the objectification business. Like their job is to objectify these people for their bodies, and they're really into their job. So sometimes they wind up really into a guy and you're like, yo, dude, you're drooling. And you know, it's a little off. And then I saw Anthony Richardson at that pro day and I was like, oh, that's what it is.
Yes.
That's what they, oh, that's why they feel this way. Oh my goodness. I'm like, I don't see how you're that big. Like this is like Cam Newton is one of those guys that it doesn't matter what you put on the sheet. He feels bigger than that. I haven't been in a room with Richardson, but I imagine it's got to be a similar situation. He's so big and also runs a 4.4, which right. Cam did not.
No, you know it when you see it kind of thing. And then when you see it, it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you talk about bone thickness. The weirdest one is the weigh-ins at the combine. I've had to sit front row there, and the whole time I'm like, this is really weird, guys. There's 200 of us just staring at guys in shorts, and that's it. Tight, you know, compression shorts, right. And we're just doing this and taking notes on it, which is just, yeah, there's a lot that...
just give me the answers at that's the end?
Or people like fight over the front row at the combine for the weigh-ins. Like they that's like a big deal. Yeah, yeah. Like it, when I was a low-level assistant, one of my first jobs, like my job before I got the job with the Falcons was to make sure we save the spots because there's no assigned seating at the weigh-ins, and it had to be in the front row. And not only had to be in the front row, it had to be the angle where you could see the guys before they walked up on the stage so you can get that extra 5 seconds to look into the guy's body. I was like, what can a picture do, guys? You get the you get the results and you get the picture. So what else do we need about this? So when I was putting together the video, I was looking at, there's a website called Mock Draftable, and it's everybody's traits, you know, the percentile, their arm length and all this at their position. And you can look at when comparing them to all quarterbacks, and Anthony Richardson's like 99th percentile weight, 99th percentile broad jump, 99th percentile 40. But then you can click on athlete and compare him to all NFL prospects for everyone in the database. And the number one comparable athlete to Anthony Richardson is Khalil Mack. And so you have Khalil Mack playing quarterback, and he's actually smart and does all the polished things that good quarterbacks do. That's a one of a kind type player, and kind of really freaky when you think about it.
Yeah. And I'm curious about this, as you've been around more people who do these evals, and the idea of smart is so amorphous, right? And, you know, I feel like people can talk themselves into or out of whatever they want. So when you see a guy like specifically Richardson, like, what are you seeing that makes you be like, oh, that dude gets it?
That's a great question. It's really the pre-snap process is what I see. Like I have been lucky enough to, I was a quarterback. I played under a really good coach, Paul Christ, who became the head coach at Wisconsin, but he was my offensive coordinator. Other coaches that I was under, and also just my experience, you know, like being a ball boy in high school and working under Scott Linehan, was I kind of can tell how each concept is. There, people think there's infinite amount of concepts that teams run. It's really just how you bucket it. It's a high low, it's a progression read, and I won't get too much into it, but I can kind of tell when a quarterback is doing that the right way. It's 1, 2, 3. The timing is right. It's like a dance. All dropbacks, timing, route timing, and protections are all tied together. A five-step timing has a certain amount of routes that can be run with that, and the protection is a certain way. 7 steps the same way, quick games the other way. And when you see something's a little off, okay, I have to reverse engineer. Was the quarterback late? Was the receiver running the wrong route? Was he wrong with the protection? And when I watch Richardson, there's so much where it's he takes his drop back and the ball's out in one hitch. So that means he knows where he's going with the right to the right read. Okay, now when he comes off the right read, is it coming out on the second hitch? Or his eyes, I say his eyes, but really you're just looking at the helmet stripe. Is he going coast to coast when he's looking and progressing? If it's calm and going 1, 2 to 3, there's no concept known to man where a quarterback goes left to right, sideline to sideline. That just doesn't happen. So when you see a quarterback doing that, like a Zach Wilson, then you're like, oh, shoot, that's scary. That means he's just guessing. Malik Willis was like that last year, which is why I've gotten frustrated when people have tried to go, oh, Anthony Richardson's just the next Malik Willis. It's like, oh, no.
There's nothing similar here.
Nothing other than they're good athletes. That is it. And on top of that, this is the pre-snap process, is protections and checks and all that. And in college, some quarterbacks get that responsibility and some just don't. The coaches are like, screw it, set it and forget it, let's go. Florida gave Richardson the ability to trump the offensive line. Meaning offensive line makes their point. We're going this way with the protection. Richardson can walk up and go, no, we're going this way to fix the play. This is something that NFL quarterbacks have to do. Like that is the next level quarterback play. And he's doing it as a redshirt sophomore who started less than 12 games. So that's where I'm like, that's some really intriguing polish that he's already showing. And it's in the sixth start. That's cool. That shows a lot of growth of what he can mentally handle.
Now, for people on the idea of concepts that I'm just showing off because I finally learned like Love this it. Week what a concept is. And so I will put it in terms that the Madden players can understand. Like curl flat is a concept, right? Yeah. The wheel yep. is a concept, right? It's like these ideas of these groupings of routes that happen that are, you know, there ain't been so many ways that people mix those things up.
Yep. Yeah, you know, everybody has to be properly spaced. Right. You don't want two guys running into each other. You want vertical and horizontal spacing.
Right, and that curl flat is basically to snuff out that corner two, that cover two corner. Like, you've got to pick one of these guys. You decide which one, the one back here or the one up front. Either right. way.
Put them in a bind. Put them in a bind. That's what it is. And people think it's just infinite. They're like, oh my God, this coach has 800 plays. It's like, no, he has 40 plays or 30 plays, and he dresses them up in dozens of ways. But once you start to learn to bucket it, you kind of see the light and go, oh, okay, this guy isn't as smart as I thought he was, or this coach is smarter than I thought he was because of how they dress up those designs.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, you mentioned Baker Mayfield, and I think like the Mayfield, Josh Allen comp, and again, I was the hugest Josh Allen skeptic, and I still don't think I was wrong for it. It's the most amazing, incredible improvement that I've ever seen. And now I love the dude. Like, but I did not expect that after that happened, that people would look at Richardson and be like, eh, I don't know about that one.
Right.
But we're going with Bryce Young this year, and Bryce Young is a really, 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 really good college quarterback. And I think that people have a tendency to think that some of the things that evaluators look at in terms of size are like lazy and just being biased, except this is a game where people knock each other around. Like, big does matter. A game where you have to stand behind what are usually bigger people than you and have to do things, that does matter. And I look at Bryce Young and I'm like, are we really sure about this? Because people seem really sure in a way that I find to be incredibly surprising.
It's surprising me as well. Outside of just the size stuff, and of course, he's a truly, truly historical outlier. He'd be the first, and he weighed at the combine at 204. Let's be honest, he's probably 190, 192. He didn't weigh as pro day because that water weight didn't keep up for another 2 weeks. So when you look at him, he would be the first round quarterback under 200 pounds since Jim McMahon in 1982, I believe it was.
His career getting the hell knocked out of him.
I have reservations with quarterbacks under 210. And that was, I did research on it when Zach Wilson was coming out. He weighed in at 211 or 212, but you watch him on film at BYU and you're like, that, no way. Like, you're 200 pounds tops. It's because they have injury history. Unless you are a true, true freak athlete. Lamar Jackson, Mike Vick were guys that were under 210 that did well. The other historical outlier was Mark Bulger of the guys under. Yeah, I know, which was not the name I expected to crop up when I did that study, but all the other ones had injury history. And that's where it's already scary. That's sub 210, much less sub 200. And again, if we're not even just looking at size and height and weight, and yes, you can paint the broad brush and say we're lazy evaluators and we're just not watching the film. When you watch Bryce Young, it's not, his arm strength isn't overwhelming. It's more adequate. I think he's a fine athlete, but not a great one. He's got, in comparisons to Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray, those guys were legit baseball players that were drafted, and they have exceptional arms, very good arms that can throw the ball very deep balls and also drive on throws. And that's where Bryce Young is a great problem solver, but he creates a lot of his own problems. And that is a little scary for me when it's only going to get harder, faster, and bigger at the NFL level. So you have size, and what are your answers? Oh, you can create? Well, hopefully you have a little bit more because you don't have the arm strength to give you that room for error. You don't have the athletic ability to give you room for error. It's all down to your mental side and your creation. And that's just a scary package to put together when the guy weighs 195 pounds.
Yeah, and you played with Russell Wilson in college. I covered him when he was at NC State. And one thing I will always remember is his very first game, because their roster was so depleted, they were thinking about having him return punts. No one would ever have Bryce Young return punts. Like, that fine athlete thing, and you and I talked about this off air about Baker Mayfield, who was a fine athlete for college, and it mattered in his collegiate performance, and he was incredibly accurate in college. But his level of college athlete, I feel very similarly about Vince Young, too. Like, your level of college athlete greatly outstripped where you were relative to your peers in the NFL. And if you're a game as a quarterback, you're used to just shaking these dudes off, and now these dudes are right there with you. Ooh, what do we do now?
Right. How many times do we see Baker try to give the dirty leg and he just gets smoked? Because he's like trying to shake a guy, and the guy's like, all right, I'll just close the space and knock you out. Like, okay, problem solved. I know you're not going against Kansas every week. You're going against the best of the best, and they're long and fast. And how many times we watch college basketball players get to the NBA and you're like, man, Buckets. Blanking on his name.
Yeah, Fournette.
Fournette. Why isn't he like just going off? It's like, yeah, because every guy is longer, faster, and just as skilled. So you have to have a lot of package. If you aren't an exceptional athlete, you better be a genius in all the other ways. And no, that's exactly it. If you're not an overwhelming athlete, it's how you win. And I think this is speaking to Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson, is I think a lot of people assume Anthony Richardson just wins with his legs and just goes, oh, he's a scramble and one read and done. And he's not. He only scrambles when he has to, and which is kind of funny. It's like, I wish you scrambled more, buddy. But then you watch Bryce Young and he gets into creation mode too early, and he's running out of LSU and he's making these highlight plays, and that's all great. And then I look at the LSU guys and it's like, that's a senior not playing in the NFL. That's a junior that's getting replaced by a transfer portal guy. You know, you're not seeing these exceptional players. Of course, he's going to run away from them. So it's just that, again, room for error. That's what all these athletes have to find, and also find ways to win. And Bryce Young's is a little more limited than others, even if he is pretty good at the creation stuff.
Man, that NFL level speed. I have not done an NFL game from the sideline, but I will never forget two moments in my life. One was 2005. I was covering, this is at Morehouse College, I was covering their homecoming, and I was on their sideline. And I just remember standing there and watching, like, it's basically a one lane freeway with cars going in both directions. And this is Division II football. And I'm just like, oh my God. Then I remember 3 years later, I'm working at the radio station in Raleigh, and Virginia Tech, when they were still, like, you know, Virginia Tech good.
Yeah.
They played against Carolina. And for the last drive of the game, I went to the sideline, and Mike Paulus, Greg Paulus's brother, who played at Duke, Mike Paulus was a top 50 national recruit at quarterback. He was a big deal. TJ Yates had gotten hurt, and they threw Paulus out there. And so we're talking about a redshirt freshman quarterback against a Bud Foster defense. And I just could not imagine how anybody was expected to make decisions in the time period that was allotted to him. And that's the Virginia Tech defense, right? Very good for what it was, but we're talking about Virginia Tech getting to the league. I just can't. And all these dudes are giant.
Yeah. It's hard to fathom. The play I come back to is from the Super Bowl. I'm watching. I was there covering it this year. First time I broke my own rule. Originally, I was never going to go to the Super Bowl unless I was part of a team or my dad was part of a team. Well, my dad's retired. I work in media now, so I guess I could break that rule. And I watch. It's Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. Hurts isn't very tall, but he's freaking 230 and squats, you know, squats a house. Mahomes is bigger than people realize. He might be very tall, 6'2 and change, but he's 230. And the play that sticks out in my mind, and it's going to be burned into there, is that Mahomes steps up and out of the pocket, and Jordan Davis from Georgia, rookie last year for the Eagles, 340 pounds.
That was nice of you.
Yeah, I know, 340. I was kind of like 370 maybe. You watch him, and he is jumping on top of Mahomes. Mahomes holds him off. He's falling to the ground and still gets the ball off to Kelce. And you say, oh, well, that's Mahomes. It's when you watch a lot of these top guys, Josh Allen's a great example, but even a Burrow or a Justin Herbert, and or even a guy like Lamar, who's not as big, but of course is a freak athlete. You watch these guys, they get those throws off. They are not taking a sack there. Most guys, if that was Jimmy G or Baker or some of these other guys, the smaller guys of the league, the non-top 10 guys, that's a sack. That's a 4-yard loss, and now it's second or third and 14. Mahomes turned that into a first down. as he's getting hit from a 360 pounder. I just upped his weight a little bit, holding him off and getting the throw off sidearm. He completes a ball and makes a great play to Travis Kelce. And that play is burning my brain, because now for me, it's, can this quarterback I'm watching as a prospect do that? And I know that's one play, I'm extrapolating a bunch, but that kind of like gives me a nice snapshot of what you're needed to do to play at a high level at the quarterback position. And that's what some of these guys can't. And that's what I'm worried that Bryce Young cannot do, is create those good plays when it should be a negative play.
Well, one of those guys that at least we think is going to be strong enough to do what you describe is Will Levis. But like I said something on the podcast last week, that I was just like, look, man, if these four guys are the four quarterbacks up top, and the Will Levis is number four, trust me, he's number four. Apparently, however, now he's number two, because it sounds like the Texans are going to take him. And I try to be careful about not being too critical of people that I haven't like really watched. Right. However, I feel like if the Texans are the only people that believe something, that's not good.
Right. It's the one person that agrees with you and you're like, I don't want that.
Yeah. Like, what is going on here?
I think what his game and what he played in at Kentucky, I think a lot of NFL coaches, I wouldn't say personnel guys, but coaches, once they watched him, so their season ends and they start evaluating prospects for the draft, there's so many of these guys that are from the Shanahan offenses that are under center, a lot of play action and all that. They watch Will Levis and go, well, that translates. It's almost a lack of creativity. It's, oh, you write comedy? Okay, well, we're going to put you in a comedy movie. You know, like that's kind of how they go about it. And he kind of is typecasted as that. And I think that's where the appeal is. I think these guys watched Kentucky, watched him in these offenses and go, oh, I recognize that play. And if you look at who the Houston Texans offense coordinator is, it's Bobby Slowick, who was, you know, a Shanahan guy. The head coach just came from San Francisco, D'Amico Ryans, like, even though he has other experience, but those guys came from that offensive system. And I think that's where they're saying, if we have to choose a guy, we'll choose that guy because he does stuff that we ask him to do, as opposed to, can he do it? We're not sure. And then you leave that room for doubt. So I think that's where the appeal comes from. He's super tough, which I do like, and he is a good athlete, but he's blind as a bat as a runner. Like, he has no vision. He is a magnet for contact. I've never seen a guy. I feel bad for him in the pocket because he gets his head taken off all the time, but then he runs down the field. I'm like, go down, go down, go down, go down. And he runs right at the DB. It's like, you know, he just, the steering wheel breaks.
He's the Bryce Harper of football. Like, there's a wall there.
Yeah, that's exactly how he plays. And so there's traits that you do like, but it's a little scary because he's also the oldest prospect of these top guys. Well, if we don't include Hendon Hooker,
right?
But you know, he's only 2 months younger than Justin Fields, and people are still saying that he needs room to grow. And it's like, ooh, it's a little scary. If you're saying in a polished offense and that he still needs time to grow, okay, that's a little scary about where he could end up.
Well, what are those Shanahan guys looking for? And the reason I ask that is I look at Kyle Shanahan's history with quarterbacks and nothing makes sense, right?
Ever.
Like, no, we're not going to take Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. We think we're going to get Kirk Cousins. Okay, now we're going to sink all this money in Jimmy Garoppolo. Nope, we're going to trade 3 first-round picks for Trey Lance. Up. Scratch that. Mr. Irrelevance got this. And I just can't figure out any rhyme or reason to, like, what it is that those guys look for.
Someone the other day, I was doing a show, was like, you know, the 49ers and Shanahan really look at S2 scores, and that's why they like Purdy. And I'm like, that works for them, but it doesn't work for, I wouldn't follow the same path that they do. I think what it is for them is they want you to be able to, and this is why a lot of coaches love Kirk Cousins. And even if he doesn't have that creation, that creativity and that, but if you get him on a whiteboard and go, hey, run, drop this concept and go through it, he will do it to a T. Exactly the coaching points, the timing, everything will be perfect. If you want a coaching clinic, you want Kirk Cousins to talk about every concept because he'll go through it. And he's the classic guy that if the defense does exactly what he does or what he thinks they're going to do, everything's perfect. But as soon as things go askew, then we've seen Kirk Cousins play, it all goes, falls apart.
Also, he and Jimmy Garoppolo are the same person is what you're telling me.
Exactly the same way. Derek Carr, too. It's like these guys, they're cut from the same cloth. If everything goes how they think it's going to go, they're great. But if they have to ad lib at all, oh my God, anything unscripted, they just fall apart. But that's what the Shanahan guys love because they think I have the perfect play and this guy's going to get open on your third step and you better stand in there and deliver that ball. And that's what they like. And that's why I get why they like Levis, because he's tough. He'll go to hey, go to A, go to B, and he'll do it right on time. But he's so robotic. But that's the thing. They like that. And also the under center stuff where he is doing all the footwork, which is teachable and coachable. But I think they think, oh, that's a leg up on the other guys because we don't have to coach that and like break in a wild horse. You know, we can, this guy's already polished the trot how we want him to.
And see, that's why my thought was if you were running a Shanahan type of system, that you would look to Richardson if for no other reason than like one of the things about Malik Willis is that stretch run game. We right. can hand the ball off so much farther off, you know, away, which matters. Right. Like I would watch that with the Titans and be like, oh my God, how'd you get over there so fast? That's why Robert Griffin was so intriguing. It seems like forever ago, but why he was so intriguing in that offense was this stretch game is going to be bananas. And I would think that everything else, at least the way it's presented to us, is that the rest of it is not that complex. So right. you don't need to go get Will Levis. That would right. be my thought.
Right. Oh, I love that thought too. Is that like the athleticism opens up the run game because it does it, not just with them designed runs and everything, but the bootlegs. And that's a great point. That's another strength with Richardson. We're just going to, I have no qualms with praising Richardson for an hour here is that when he does bootleg stuff, there's a great play against Tennessee. It's before there's the play, the crazy play against Tennessee where he's bouncing around the pocket and throws the touchdown. And it's like, oh, crazy. It's the play before that one. It's a fourth down. They run a bootleg. It's a DB blitz off the edge and he outraces the DB to the corner because he gets the angle on him and completes the throw. And I agree with you. Like, why wouldn't you want the guy that can move really well and do those throws and open up possibilities for your whole offense? So,
but again, Kyle Shanahan, he traded 3 first round picks for Trey Lance.
And the whole point of Trey Lance was that he was tired of having to call the perfect play. He wanted the creativity ability, the creation ability. And now he's like, we tried for 2 games. Let's go back to what I'm used to. Let's do the joystick quarterback where he goes exactly where I tell him to throw the ball.
Now, let me ask you this. What the hell did CJ Stroud do to everybody?
I don't know, man. I be Cali chill, I guess. Be a Zoomer. Like, I don't know. I have no idea, man.
And he's got to be so confused right now.
Like, where's his agent at, by the way? Like,
well,
hey,
his agent is, the thing is, his agent is Mulgeta. And so there had been the hypothesis that the Texans didn't want him because of the history with Deshaun Watson.
That's
like one thing I can say, his agent is good.
Yeah.
His agent is really, really good.
Just look at the contract Deshaun got. Yes. That's right. The Texans connection there. that kind of takes him off the board. It was like in Atlanta after with the Falcons. Virginia Tech guys were kind of taken off the board after a while.
Yes.
for certain reasons. I don't know what Stroud did because when you watch him, it's like this guy should be, everybody should like this guy. He's accurate. He does everything on time. He's tough. Like, and then the question marks were, why he's a good athlete? Why isn't he using? And then he like does it against Georgia and other games, like against Northwestern. He was like obviously the best player on the field, even though he only threw for 60 yards. It was like 60 mile an hour gust winds. And he said, screw it, I'm going to start running around. It's like this guy took the game into his hands and he's tough. I don't know. I really don't know. He must be just like, he just must have bombed those interviews or just somebody's like, he had one answer they didn't like. He's a cat guy instead of a dog guy or something like that, or some stupid question he didn't answer correctly. But I don't know what he did because his tape's really, really good.
Are there any questions about that Ryan Day offense? And I asked that because we had the questions about Fields and what people said was this offense got a bunch of these option routes. So the dudes are going to have to wait forever before they can make a decision. And I didn't know if that had come up with Stroud in any of the evaluation also.
There were some timings, like my negatives with Stroud were that it's because of that offense where he has to take an extra hitch, right? Where I talked about where everything comes out on time and everything. He'll kind of go 1, 2, 3 hitch and then throw. And there's just that little fat. But that's really, to me, very coachable, like very fixable as a coach, because you just go, all right, we just got to limit the options for him or tell him, hey, just trust it and let it go. Because when he throws on time, it's fantastic. But that offense, though, is also that he's got 2 potential first round pick tackles. You know, he's got Jackson Smith and Jigba this year. Also Marvin Harrison Jr., who'll be a freaking top 5 pick next year. He's incredible. And then last year, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. So you have guys just coming open. So the room for error again is greater for him because he doesn't have to throw exactly on time to maximize their room and their separation. So I think that's where some of the blemishes come from. They don't run a ton of concepts as well. They just run kind of the same 5 or 6 money concepts that are like, you know, like a guy in Madden. Oh, it's mm-hmm. 3rd and 10. All right, here comes the money play. Try and stop it. They kind of fall into that a little bit, unless it's a big game like against Georgia. So I think where that's some of that comes where it's like, okay, what's his comfort level when you get him outside those five plays?
You know, that receiver you mentioned, Junior, every year we hear about people asking him crazy questions in the draft, you know, interviews like the Dez Bryant one, which didn't go exactly the way that people think, but still, right. You know, felt like it was a little bit out of line. I bet they don't ask that boy nothing untoward about his family of origin. Not a damn word.
Nothing. No car wash questions.
No, no. What'd you learn about running routes from Pops? Yes.
right. Yeah. What'd you hear? Would you go to a lot of Colts practices when you grew up? Like, right. That's what they're going to focus on.
And the answer is going to be actually, no, we just stayed in Philly. He only went there to work.
That's funny. That's
that really, was it. Yeah, but he right. is, I know this has nothing to do with the draft, obviously, but yeah. I am fascinated by the fact that I don't think this comes up nearly enough of how much bigger Junior is yes. than Senior in this case. While apparently, like, I saw somebody, I think it was, may have been Steve Smith, I'm not sure, but they made the argument that he's bigger than his dad and faster than his dad. I'm like, no, I don't think he's faster than his dad, but he is like two of his dad.
Yes, he is legitimately head and shoulders taller than his dad. He's all of 6'3". I know he's listed 6'4", but he looks like he's 6'3". But then I would say he's faster, but I would say he has the same foot quickness as his dad, which is, that's the scary part, is he's 6'3", 6'4", and there's no fat on his route running. And he's a sophomore. It's, and he catches everything, and he can stack. And then he does have speed though. Like I've seen plays where he's stacking corners on deep balls, 'cause he beats guys off the line. He's tall, doesn't let shorter DBs get into him, like little stoutier guys. So he beats press. He's long. He can stack guys deep, and he's got perfect footwork on route running. What am I missing with this guy? Because I mean, that's a guy I want to build my whole offense around, that's just scary, man. I'm just scared to think of him.
I tell you this, it's a good thing we got Trey Wingo off the draft coverage, because those of you who remember the Trey Wingo era of the NFL draft, and I like Trey, but Trey leaned a little hard on the hard scrabble tales of people's youths, and you know, his father's did 40 years in jail. His mama, right. Who knows what the hell she doing right now. Man, the edits that would have had to come up when Junior hit the track. Ixnay.
You know, when some of the picks come up and it's commercial, but they come up on the bottom, they'll make sure, they'll time it up. They'll go, okay, oh, who's up? Okay, boom, hit the button. We're going to commercial right now.
Doesn't matter if it's the number 5 pick.
Nope.
We're getting out of here. We're getting out of here.
Wow, number 6 is on the clock already. Jeez, what happened here? Just pass over that one.
I don't want to lead too hard on this Viking stuff, because that's not what you do. You got your own life. I want to be clear about that. Yeah. But something happened. I read the story about this. I imagine you saw it, and I hadn't thought about it in so long. It's the 20th anniversary of the Kevin Williams pick. Yeah. And for those who don't remember, the Vikings had the number 7 pick in the draft and didn't get the pick in. And then didn't get the pick in again. And then when 9 came around, they actually took the pick. And nobody knew what in the world was going on. It was totally confusing. But I want to bring that up because I feel like there's an underrated part of that nobody talks about, which is, how is Kevin Williams not in the Hall of Fame? Like, they fell down those picks and got a monster. Like, it actually was kind of savvy.
Yes, he, I know, I wish they were a little more savvy than, but I wish I was part of the plan, was to save that money in the draft slot and everything. But yeah, in the story, I'm glad it finally comes to light, because I can actually talk about it now, because now it's public, is the owner at the time, Red McCombs, who just recently passed, he was kind of a penny pincher. And he came in, and this is before the current CBA that we have in the NFL, where these guys are slotted their salary. And so it was the wild, wild west when he negotiated rookie contracts. And he came in right before the draft started and said, trade the pick. And so usually trades are worked out weeks in advance, days in advance. And so they had about, as teams were picking, they had like an hour to figure out some trade that now they're on the clock and they had to do it. So it was because some of that, some penny pinching, that they ended up missing the pick, because the Ravens, they ended up making the trade. This is all in the article. They ended up making the trade, and the Ravens decided not to turn it in. They just said, oh, well, if you guys miss the clock, we can rush up and get our pick in. So, sorry. I don't know. We lost the deal. Didn't report it to the NFL. Ozzie Newsome had a great answer in the interview. He's like, yeah, I tried to reach out and they didn't pick up the phone call. It's like, oh, you're great, Ozzie. That's why you're a legend, man. You know how to spin it. But yeah, that was I wish it was. I could say it was savvy, but it was more financial that led to the 9th pick. But I will say that Kevin Williams was the target that entire time. So
yeah, they got a beast.
One good thing. They got a monster.
yeah, he is one of those guys that somehow, and I just don't have a great answer for how, he didn't at that position. Only certain guys get it, right? Like, I don't know what you have to do as a defensive tackle for people to look up and be like, oh, no, he's that guy. Right. But he was that guy. People remember Pat Williams, I think, more because Pat Williams was fatter.
Right. And so they're like, oh, there you go. And then they remember the Williams Wall nickname, you know, and all that. And Kevin, too, it's like he played across the D-line. Like, he was just a mauler. That's who, actually, I said the high-end comparison. That's why this is a guy in this draft is Jalen Carter. Is I said if he hits everything he can hit, Kevin Williams is his comparable. Like that's their play styles are very similar, how strong they are and like fluid as athletes and everything. But Kevin was special, man. Like, he was just truly, truly strong, but he also was athletic enough to line up as an edge and get 10 sacks. He got 10 sacks as a rookie. Like, he was an all-time freak. I'm glad you're bringing him up because I love hyping up Kevin Williams. He was an all-decade player, and people like forget about it.
They're That's what I'm saying. Like, all the all-decade guys eventually get into the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Right. But I don't know how that's the one that just kind of slipped out of people's minds. Like, he got all the first team all. It's not like he wasn't getting the first team all pros. It's not like he wasn't getting the accolades.
He got them all. He got all the accolades, got the stats, got the, like, you know, the comedian kind of thing. You know, he's the football player's football player kind of guy. Like, I don't know. I don't know either. I he got retired he got put in the Ring of Honor with the Vikings. Thank God, finally. But that's something I'm waiting for too. He's also lost a bunch of weight. He's like a classic guy. Like, his head size is the same though, but his body is like so much smaller, so it looks a little off when I see him. But I agree. I'm glad you're hyping this up. But yeah, what's Kevin Williams for Hall of Fame? Like, let's pound the table for this. I'm all about this.
Let's make it happen. I want to ask you this. You are going to the draft, which is in Kansas City this year. And honestly, I can't think of any place I want to be less than a place with thousands of people who would travel to go to the draft. Like what kind of scene are we expecting here? Is it even going to be warm? Like, are people going to be outdoors in the cold for this?
I actually don't even know. I haven't checked the weather. I know I'm in a studio, so I'll be with my button-down shirt trying to look clean. I'll actually have to shave for it. I thought that last year when the – it's kind of mean, but here we go. My wife was working, you know, she worked at a casino job on the strip. I should say casino job at a casino. She was in convention sales. She was working at Fountain Blue, which is about to open this year. And the draft comes in last year. And at the time she's working at MGM, and, you know, I think they said 500,000 people or 400,000 and change came to Vegas last year. And when she was working at MGM at the time, they're all like, you know, we're expecting a lot of our, like, you know, Bellagio's to sell out, you know, the big time, the casinos. The Wynn said they didn't sell out at all. And I said to my wife, I go, you know what type of people travel for the draft, right? I think Circus is probably sold out. I think a lot of the downtown casinos, I don't want to like besmirch their names, but I think there's a lot of people flying in looking at those $50 to $60 rates, not the $250, $300 Dude, rates.
It's so funny that you mentioned the Wynn on that, because I had never gone in the Wynn. Like, when I'm in Vegas, I typically am on the other end, and I went in the Wynn during Summer League. And I'm like, oh, this is where the players are. Like, oh, there's Adam Silver and Masai Ujiri. This is where the money at.
Yes, they call that luxury corridor is what they call that in Vegas now. And the name makes a lot of sense, especially once you go in there or you go to one of the bars. When you see $25 minimum tables is the cheapest table they have, that's exactly what type of setting you're going into.
Right, $25 minimum at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
I was going to say during the day. And then you walk around. Or it's a $50 table and it's packed. And you're like, $50 minimum craps table? Okay.
Right, yeah, like, I don't know where you gamble at night in Vegas anymore if you ain't coming to, like, really throw money around. Because I'm the dude on TV that have been looking at them tables like, nah, I ain't doing that, right? Because, like, look, if it's a $50 minimum, to me, if you are not putting, like, 15, 20 hands down to start, you can't do this. So I got to put $1,000 down, basically, for this to be an activity. Otherwise, I'm just here till I run out of money.
Right. Three hands and you're done. It's the clip from Swingers where they get the $100 chip and that was it. They just get the one bet on it. Yeah. That, I will say that downtown Vegas, which is, you know, Fremont and all that, the areas right outside of it have gotten kind of cool. Like, they threw a bunch of money and a bunch of hipsters at it. And then now it's kind of cleaned up and fun to go down. But like the Casino Circa is great. I'm not sponsored by them in any way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. I should be by this point in time, but you'll find some 10, maybe $15 tables there, even during prime time, which is really nice, and $5 during the day. I like to gamble, but that's the thing. I like it to be a time waster, not a, you know, it's not, it's more about the time spent there. And usually you have to win to do that. But even if when I'm losing, I hopefully get at least a half hour out of, right, out of my gambling experience.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not here to make a profit because honestly, yeah, that's stupid. Right. Right. Like if this was about you making a profit, it wouldn't be a casino. And it certainly wouldn't have such fancy lights. Like that's not how this works.
I feel like it wouldn't exist.
Right. I feel like if I put $200 down, I am paying for $200 of fun. And yes, hopefully my $200 of fun will extend into a time or whatever it is. Right. But man, yeah, I've had those times where I wind up there and I've done all this splitting and doubling down. And I got like maybe $300-$400 on the table. Winning doesn't feel good.
No,
it just feels like relief. It's just like,
oh, like a field goal going in at the end. Just, oh, thank Christ.
Right.
we won the game and I got a heart attack out of it.
Yeah. Like this ain't really a good time. Like it's not. And I enjoy it. And like, look, when it is a profit, it's a good time.
It's great.
Don't get me wrong. Right. But I'm not built for that. Like people who are really about that life, they'd be like, yo, man, I came out of Vegas up 10 G's. I'm like, how did your broke ass even get to a point where you could do enough where this is possible?
Right. That you're throwing that kind of money because you have to spend money to make money usually. Yes. Well, that's what I'll be around. I kind of, when I moved here, so I moved here 5 years ago, I kind of got the gambling out of my system in like the first 3 months, AKA I lost in the first 3 months and I got it all out of my system. I'll go to craps tables and there'll be like a hot table. It's just boom, boom, boom. A couple of bets hit, a couple points hit. And you look around and like the guy with a bunch of money isn't even like cheering. Like he isn't even getting a fist pump. And it's like, is this even fun? Like, is this just like, you're just getting it done? Like you're just checking this box. Like, hey, I got to gamble $5,000 today. You know, yes, gotta pull some weeds, mow the lawn and bet $5,000 at the craps table on the pass line. Like, you know, like that's not, that's your point of fun. Like I go there. And like you said, like, my $200, if I hit a couple points, oh my God, I'm obnoxious. I'm high fiving everybody, even the guys that did the don't pass. I don't care. You're high fiving me. I don't care about your bad juju you just threw at me.
No, I'm a blackjack dude and I get to my don't touch it now stack, right?
Okay.
This guarantees that I could come back and have this fun again later. Right? Like give me that and some big chips.
Yes.
So I can put this over here and I can't squander it. But then I mess around. Next thing you know, man, break this thing down for me, man. Like I ain't ready to go yet.
Hey, I get four greens. Yeah.
Like the worst for me, though, last time I went to Vegas, they canceled my outgoing flight and they did it in the worst play. They didn't cancel it. They just kept delaying.
Oh,
and
no.
I found something out. There was a part that they needed. And they're like, we're waiting for the part to come in. I'm like, come in from where? They said Atlanta. I was like, y'all ain't got no warehouse here. Like, nice. like the warehouse is in Atlanta. Like, are you kidding me? But there's no way to kill time in Vegas that does not, like, you're just going back to the table.
You're going right straight. Or the slot machine at the airport that you could just say, you just hear that wheel of fortune. Like, oh,
right.
Where's that at? Oh, right next to Hudson News.
Yeah. follow the cigarette smoke and it'll get you right to the slot machines. But I just remember I couldn't get on another flight to the red eye. And it was just like, man, brutal. I just hope this goes well for me because I don't have anything to do but gamble.
That's absolutely brutal. I now have the flip side where I fly back into Vegas and I'm going home, but everyone else on my flight's already like half drunk or fully drunk and they're yelling, you know, 25 minutes on our flight and we're entering Las Vegas. You got the three idiots in the back going, Vegas! And then I'm like, I just want to get home. I got my headphones off. I'm like, sweatshirt, hoodie up. Like, no, I look like the Unabomber when I fly. But that's exactly it with Vegas too, is that they just try to do everything possible to make you walk through the casinos, walk through all the noise, all the lights, just to throw down, even if it's a $5 bet, a $10 bet. Hey, have you heard about our sports betting app? Yeah, it's super simple to sign up for. And we got a $50 bonus thrown in. It's like, just lights and temptation thrown at you in every way, shape, and form.
Yep, and I'm here for it. I admit.
I know,
like,
right?
Like it's like, okay, hey, it's just a mob.
I grew up around the horse track. My dad's huge into horse racing, so it was like this. Like you said, that cigarette smoke. That's almost like it's like feels like home a little bit. Feels like Emerald Downs in Seattle or Churchill or Lexington or something of that sort. Oak Lawn in Arkansas. Like feels like one of those spots. Oh, it's bad. It's really bad. I'd be like the youngest person there by 30 years. Like the time.
I used to go with my aunt, who also coincidentally smoked a lot of cigarettes. But my mom was from Oklahoma City, and there's just not a lot of things to do in Oklahoma City. So they would just take me to the track, and we just go bet $2 on this, bet $2 on that. You know, little buddy, because they are thrifty people. But that's what we do. We
$5 show bet. You know,
that's right. I'd go there, and it would. I mean, definitely youngest person on the scene every time. But of course, I was 8, so you would like hope that I would be the youngest person.
Yeah, it's one of those where looking back, it was like, wow. Like, I knew how to read the form when I was like 9 or 10 and knew, you know, like what the testing numbers are and the workout numbers meant and what odds changes meant, knew what parimutuel betting was and why when people came up to my dad and said, "Why? Oh, you can bet on horses?" And it's like, well, it's parimutuel betting. It's not sports betting. So that's why. have you ever looked up why, you know, like NFL types can bet on horses but couldn't bet on sports before?
No.
Well, look at the family history of the Runas and the Maras.
I did know about the Rudies.
And look who owns a couple of horse tracks around the country. And yeah, once you piece that together, you're like, oh, that's why horse racing was always okay. But you know, sports betting was not.
Did you read that series in the Pittsburgh paper a few months ago about the Rooney family?
No.
Oh, I got to find you the links.
Oh, please.
It is. Well, it's two things that are interesting. One, the Rooneys are like bizarro world where the second generation ownership was the one that cleaned things up.
Yep.
And the reason was, the first generation ownership was just a little too busy doing other stuff.
I'm excited to see what other stuff. I think I know what it is, but I'm excited
it
to
rhymes
see what it
with
is.
It rhymes with Schmeckets. Like it was just explicitly that he was the Rackets man.
Yep.
No mystery to it.
Fourth Sookie. Like, something that rhymes with fob.
It is decidedly Pittsburgh. Like, that's the other part of it, too. Like, it is very grimy, Rust Belt underworld. But it is amazing how since the Steelers got good, because people forget, the Steelers were awful until they were good. Once they got good, they became a venerable family. But it's not because of the first generation. Yeah. The second one's the one that came in and made things happen.
And they're all named Dan and Art. So yes. I got to remember which one's which.
Yes.
Yeah, one of them. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Looking at the founding of the NFL is really, really interesting to look at. Oh, there's a lot of New York connections here. Wow. A lot of Italian last names. Oh, I'm sure there's no correlation here whatsoever.
Those stories are way more fun than what they give us.
Way more.
About college sports is you are of Midwestern college sports, which operates one way. I'm from the South. It's grimy. Yes. And that's what makes it fun.
Yes. Or when my 2 years living in Atlanta, I always say Atlanta, but it's Buford, Georgia, which is a whole different place. And the second question everyone asks you, you know, what's your name? And then second question was, who do you cheer for? And after a while, I realized they meant college football. Mm-hmm. And that was I grew up around the NFL my whole life. Like, so I was never really a true college guy, like Maryland basketball. My dad's a Terp, didn't graduate, but he was a Terp. And so around Gary Williams and Steve Francis and those teams, I was like, all about Maryland hoops. But like college football was never like kind of that for me. You know, University of Minnesota wasn't great. Maryland had a couple nice years under Fridge and all that, but it was kind of never that. And then really going to Wisconsin, GA-ing at Pitt, and then move those 2 years in the South. And that's when it's like, it all clicked for me. I was like, Oh, this is a lifestyle for you guys. This is fun thing to put on Saturdays to wait till the NFL. This is truly, truly your guys' lives.
Right. I'm going to drop people one random factoid because we're coming to the end of taking enough of your time, and I appreciate you. I just happened to be on a wiki binge, and I saw, speaking of Pitt, I don't know why I wound up looking up the 1980 Pittsburgh Panthers. That was a college team with 4 Hall of Fame players.
Yes. Yes.
Where one of the Hall of Fame players was the other defensive end. That is the craziest thing I've ever seen. 2 Hall of Fame linemen, 2 Hall of Fame offensive linemen, 2 Hall of Fame defensive linemen, and Dan Marino.
Yep. Yep.
And one Hall of Fame defensive lineman. The other defensive lineman was maybe the best college defensive end of all time. Ricky Jackson.
Oh, Ricky Jackson. Oh, my dad played with him too. And also the offensive line had other like Pro Bowlers.
Mark May was on there.
Like even outside the Hall of Famers, they had other guys that were accomplished NFL offensive linemen. Those teams were loaded. I didn't really realize that till I got there. And when my dad actually, he got recruited by them, and he was telling me some old stories, and you know, they had some thrifty hands. I should say thrifty, loose hands in the recruiting back then.
Yeah, I was going to say, after we get off of here, I can't wait for the Jackie Sherrill stories. Because that's what we're really talking about here is the greatness of Jackie Sherrill. Not an ounce of hypocrisy to him either. This is just what it is.
And you want to know why my dad didn't consider Pitt? When Jackie went down back down south, and that's when he was like, oh, I'm not interested in Pitt anymore.
So he went to play for what? That's Bobby Ross, I guess he went to play for.
Yes. Yes, he did. Bobby Ross. That's exactly right.
An entirely different human than Jackie Sherrill.
Yeah. Couldn't be any more opposite, especially from the stories I've heard. And that's the other thing, too, is when he got recruited at Maryland's Maryland now, but it's like, I didn't realize Maryland was pretty damn good in the 70s. Like, he got there and, you know, coming off like a 9-2 season or whatever it was. Yeah. So, he, my last story with them is that the hardest he ever got hit was he played against Lawrence Taylor. But Lawrence Taylor was a nose tackle at North Carolina, which is, I think, blows people's minds. He was a 260-pound freak.
Tells everything you need to know about Lawrence Taylor right there.
Yeah. And my dad said he got hit by him. And it's the only time in his life that he said, I wanted to die. Like, I got hit. My sternum felt like it caved in and I wanted to die. But that just speaks to Lawrence
Taylor. Just imagine lining up across from Lawrence Taylor before anybody really knew what this was.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, North Carolina, they say they've got this guy to watch out for. I guess we're going to see.
Yeah. Or like, Bruce Smith at Virginia Tech. Like,
right. Or like Pep at Carolina. Like, the idea that Julius Peppers is probably the second best defensive lineman that school had.
Yeah.
Because the other one's LT.
And the second freakiest one. not even the freakiest defensive player that's played there. The second freakiest player that's played there, which is absurd. Oh,
yeah. Like, you played on the Final Four basketball team. Really neat. Anyway, Lawrence Taylor.
Pretty good,
y'all
right?
You ought to beat him.
That's funny.
And that is Nate Tice. Check him out at The Athletic. Does great work covering the NFL. Check out his coverage of the NFL draft. He'll be covering the NFL draft Thursday through Saturday, doing live shows for The Athletic. My man, I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a ton of fun.
Dude, man, no problem. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Parker Owens, Dan Stasik, and Adi Khan handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.